Bryan. It's That's Life with Mark Snyder. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Mark.
Every record is a chance to, express what I'm doing at the time. I personally feel like each one I'm looking to find a particular sound and a particular vibe on the record, and song-wise, I'm trying to experiment with different things. And so for me, each one has been a completely different project. I'm a big fan of music, and I grew up listening to a lot of different kinds of music, and I've studied a lot of different kinds of music from turn of the century stride piano and jazz up to punk rock and just about every kind in between.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a fan of so many things, and I think as a musician, the more that you listen to, the more that influences you. When you hear a band that does one thing, I can tell what they listen to as kids. And I think when you're a kid, you're really impressionable in that way.
Mm.
I've done a lot of different kinds of things along the way, from playing in rock and roll bands, to playing in jazz groups, to doing session work, to writing songs for commercials, to writing songs for just the fun of it, to all different kinds of things. I've done lectures at universities talking about about 20th century music, American music, and the way that it changed and how it changed, and I've related it to the piano and how it worked and how it was played along the way. So
I'm talking to A.J. Croce, who sounds like he's been around for 40 years, but is only about 25 years old, right?
I'm 28, yeah.
28? There's an old bio here, I guess. It says you're 25 on the bio. Okay, well, that's all right. So you've aged quickly. But it's interesting, though, because I remember actually listening to your first CD that came out. That was kind of wild. And you've tried everything from blues to jazz to rock, and the one that's on here right now has a lot of a jazzy, bluesy type of stuff, some good rock. But I noticed there's a few more pop type songs on this thing as well.
Yeah, this whole record is a pop record.
Yeah, I mean, songs like Maybe, which start right out. I mean, these are actually commercially viable songs.
Well, they're getting played on the radio, which is a nice change for me. I think that. It's definitely something that the stations have started to pick up, and college radio is picking up on this. And for me, it was like I think it was just another side of some of my influences, listening to the Zombies and the Beatles and the Stones and all different kinds of 60s pop bands that influenced me as a teenager, and bands that I loved. And I think that I just needed a change, and I was really inspired. One day I was driving in the car and singing along with some Paul McCartney song, and I was just sort of inspired to write some pop songs.
Mm.
And it was something different than I had really set out to do before. Being able to capture a hook.
Well, you're getting dangerously close to dad when you do things like that.
I guess so. I think that I think his, you know, for him, you know, catching the hook was part of it from early on, because he was, you know, influenced by people like Liber and Stoller and a lot of that, you know, R&B.
Yep.
And I was also influenced by R&B, but I think I was, you know, maybe more influenced by obscure music that never saw the light of day. And I think that when you're, you know, when you listen to too much of that stuff, you end up writing music that never sees the light of day.
Now, you know, it's amazing to me to note that you never met your dad.
That's right.
He passed away. He had that
when I was two. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you were in vitro at that point, so you never met him. And
I was 2 years old when he died.
Oh, you were two. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was, you know, he was traveling a lot during that period.
Mm. But I mean, the good thing about it is that you can get to know him through his music, as we have. And actually, he was quite an interesting fellow.
And he was, definitely.
Do you think that you've inherited? Do you think there's genes that pass on those kind of talents?
You know, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if it's the talent that gets passed on, or maybe a perspective, or a way to the way of thinking of something, or maybe even how you come to a conclusion. But I don't know if talent is necessarily passed on. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, it is. You got a double dose. You got a double dose because of mom and dad.
I just, you know, I practiced all, you know, all my life, as a kid and as a teenager, I practiced, 6-8 hours a day, learning how to play piano. And, so for me, it was something that I, you know, practiced. I think some things were easier. I tried a lot of instruments before I got to the piano, and I think that I got to the piano and it just felt natural.
Mm.
And,
Since this bio is incorrect the whole way so far, I'm afraid to even ask about some of the things in here, but
yeah.
This does say that you were blind until you were 10.
Yeah, I went blind when I was 4, and it was, you know, it was a difficult time, and I had, I was very sick, and over time my sight gradually came back partially,
mm-hmm.
in one of my eyes, and so I could, you know, as time went on, it wasn't like I saw overnight, but gradually I saw better and better, and so. It was natural that I would do something where you didn't have to see, and playing piano was a real natural thing. I started when I was about 5 or 6, and just loved it and found sort of a solace in it, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, I always, you know, I feel lucky that I had that.
I would think that when you go through something like that you appreciate all the things you can see now. Much more than anybody else that never gone through that. And I would assume that it maybe comes through in some of the music as well.
I think so. It's hard to say sometimes how much your environment has a role in that. It sometimes, especially when you're young and you're faced with sort of a difficult time, you don't necessarily rationalize it like an adult, and so when you talk about it, you end up, I don't know, what I think is that it's just sort of ingrained, because I've been so sort of molded by those experiences, I couldn't really separate them out and say, oh well, at that time I felt this or felt that. It was just something that happened to me, and I feel lucky that that I can see, you know, and that I have, you know, kids that can see, and that everything's good.
So when did you first go on stage then as a musician?
I started, my first gig was playing a bat mitzvah when I was 12 years old. And from there on I started playing all different kinds of stuff, from playing in, you know, garage bands and playing organ in some groups and playing in doing all different kinds of stuff, playing in swing groups, playing in jazz bands, blues bands, all different kinds of rock and roll and, you know, Beatle cover bands.
Sure.
I mean, just about everything.
Did you grow up around San Diego?
I did.
Yeah. You know, I just, as I mentioned earlier, I just love San Diego, and La Jolla is one of my favorite places in the world.
It's a beautiful place.
It really is. Do you still live out that area?
I live close to the famous San Diego Zoo.
Ah, okay. So it's just, you know, I was really surprised by that city for one reason, and that was because it was so clean.
Oh, it is.
It's just like immaculate. Even the worst sections of town were nice.
Yeah.
Where in any other city, including Boston, there are parts of the cities you don't want to show people.
Yeah.
You know? And it's kind of strange.
Yeah, it's a nice place.
I'm talking with A.J. Croce, and as I mentioned before, I think he's inherited gifts from not only his dad, Jim Croce, but also his mother, Ingrid, who was a very talented folk singer and singer with her husband many years ago. Does she still sing at all?
No, she lost her voice about 1980, and she tried to have an operation to fix it, and it didn't, unfortunately, it didn't work, and so that's when she opened a restaurant, and she opened a number of clubs. At the time when she first opened her restaurant, it was in sort of a so-so part of town. They were just starting to clean it up downtown San Diego, and so they would close early because there was just no one on the streets at night. And I started promoting shows as a teenager with my friends, and we'd put on all different kinds of shows, from, you know, soul music and ska and you know, R&B and rock and roll and all different kinds of punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we would put on these shows, and we would get hundreds of people to come down. And my mom and I were talking, and we've always been, you know, good friends, and I was saying, you know, if you could get some music in here that would, you know, allow people to check something out that you know, underage kids can't check out, it would really work. And it was so hard to get permits for that at the time. And she did it, and she put in a great jazz club, and then she put in another club next to it that had R&B and rock and roll and just about everything.
Mm.
And folk music and different kinds of stuff. And she has, you know, she has half a block in downtown San Diego now.
Wow. And it was really interesting. I was so excited when I saw that. I couldn't, you have no idea, because I was a huge, huge fan of Jim Croce.
Oh, that's
everything cool. He ever did, I just thought he was incredible. And I have, you know, all those CDs they've released since, you know, and including the big one with the double, triple one, whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's just... it was incredible music. So when I was walking along with my wife at that day and saw, I think it was called Croce's Bar and Grill.
Croce's,
yeah. And I said, wow, I wonder if this is related to Jim. And I ended up walking in there, and I met your mother.
That's great.
And it was just the coolest thing that, you know. So now the progression goes, and here you are on the show, which is kind of great. And this CD, I wanted to ask you a little bit, how you end up in higher octave music?
Well, it was... I don't know. I think that I had sent my stuff out to a lot of different people, and Dan, one of the heads of Higher Octave, heard it and heard me play live and really got into it, and wanted to make a record. At the same time, I'd been going up to... I live in San Diego. I drive up to L.A. To do a lot of songwriting, and I'm doing that today, in fact. And I think that one day... I was up there meeting with Michael James, who was sort of more known for alternative music, like Jane's Addiction and Hole and
mm-hmm.
L7 and all these sort of rock and roll bands. And he and I just hit it off, and we started writing songs. And then I didn't necessarily know that they were going to be for me until I started playing a couple of them live and had a really good time with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that point, we just, it was like, you know, great timing, and we made a record.
And this thing, the album, by the way, is called the CD now. I keep saying album. You can tell how old I am. AJ Croce's new CD is called Transit, and it's available all over the place. You can go on the web and get it everywhere, and Higher Octave Music has it, as well at the PMP Network Superstore. We're selling it, too. So
great.
Check it out on the web and go buy your copy, because this is a loaded CD. I mean, there's, like, no bad songs on here, and there are some that are just incredible, like Maybe in Summer Can't Come Too Soon.
Oh, thank you so much.
Outstanding tunes.
Oh, I really appreciate it. That's really nice of you to say.
Well, I have your first album, and I have your second. I'm missing the third, unfortunately. But it's just amazing to me, the progression that you've made as a musician and a writer, and I think that you're really on your way.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be it. Now, you've been touring with a lot of different people. I want to ask you about some of these folks. Like, it says in your bio, you've toured with B.B. King and Santana and Dave Matthews, Rod Stewart, James Brown, Ray Charles.
Yeah.
What is it like, especially to tour with guys like Ray Charles, who've been around so long?
Ray Charles, he was a huge influence on me. I think partially early on because I, you know, as a kid I was blind, and for any musician that's blind, I think it's, you know, at that time they got turned on to Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder.
Exactly, yeah.
And so they were both really inspirational to me, so being able to work with him was like a dream, and still one of my favorite concerts. We played two shows together, one in Wolf Trap and one at Ravinia, both beautiful concert halls, and so that was a great experience. With all of the other, you know, people you mentioned, it was, you know, B.B. King was really the first person that gave me a chance, and I sort of credit him with giving me, you know, my start and really playing music to a big crowd, because he saw me playing at a benefit concert for the Songwriters Hall of Fame, which my father was getting inducted into a number of years ago. I guess it was like 89, and he 88 or 89, he heard me play and was very complimentary, and a few weeks later I got a call to go out on tour and do a West Coast tour with him.
Did you find yourself doing more blues type music with him?
Well, as a solo piano player, I sort of gravitated towards that, towards roots music, because of the ability to be the whole band. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact.
When you're playing, you know, if you're playing guitar, you might, and you're playing by yourself, it might come across as more folky, or it might maybe a little bit more rock and roll. But as a piano player, you know, it ends up most of the time sounding a little bit more rootsy. It doesn't matter who it is playing by themselves. I think that's just a tendency. So without a band and playing by myself at that time, I think that was the mode I was in.
Mm-hmm. You know, Santana has had what an incredible, I wouldn't even say comeback, because he's been around for a long time and has done great all the time, but what an incredible year he's had.
Oh, I'm so happy for him, and I was so happy that he, you know, won so many awards at the Grammys, because he's so deserving of it. He's such a good person, and I had a chance to meet him when I was doing a few shows. It was a great opportunity I had about 5 years ago to go on stage with Santana, Jeff Beck, and Rod Stewart, and, you know, open up the shows, and I was just playing solo piano. Mm. And it was just an amazing opportunity, and it was, you know, I feel lucky that I had that chance.
It's interesting you mentioned meeting some of these folks, because I've talked to so many folks who began as warm-up acts for other people,
uh-huh.
And they mentioned some people would be real nice, come backstage or whatever, and say, hey, good job, kid. Others would never even talk to them. Have you found that, or have you found most people to be pretty sweet and nice,
you know,
to you?
Every person I've ever played for, I think, has been, you know, genuinely nice. And when I go and open up for someone, probably the majority of the people in the audience don't know who I am, my goal is to really warm up the audience and get them into it and get them ready for what they came to see. And so, so my ambition in that case is really to put on the best show I can, and really, you know, entertain the audience and get them into listening to music and get them in the frame of mind for what they're about to hear.
We're talking to A.J. Croce. The CD is called Transit, and it's from Higher Octave Music. It is incredible, and you got to go buy it, folks. Go check it out. You know, I did find one piece of dichotomy I had to ask you about.
Okay.
I noticed in the back cover, it looks like you have a new wedding ring. And most of the songs on this CD are about losing someone, breaking up, kind of like that type of genre. I'm wondering, there seemed to be a dichotomy there.
Well, I think that I really enjoy writing love songs, and I think that they're the most universal. So whether you're talking about a romance or whether you're talking about a relationship, a lot of times you can use it as a metaphor for something else that's going on, and hopefully in some cases that's all there is to it. You know, in other cases, you know, I try to go a little bit further than that. The song that's called "It's Only Me" is a story about a young guy. I was reading this book of archaeology by Charles Pellegrino, and he was talking about this eruption that took place on the island of St. Pierre in the year 1902. And there had been this young guy in a bar fight the night before this sort of catastrophe. And he had gotten in a bar fight and killed the guy he was fighting, was thrown in jail, put in solitary confinement in the basement of the jail on the island. And when the eruption took place and the earthquakes were going on, the warden set everyone free. And this young guy stayed in there until it was all over. And when he came out, there was no one left. It was just him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put myself in his shoes, and consequently he wasn't charged for the crime because there was no one there to really talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I try and write about different topics along the way, but definitely love, lost, made, found, is always a definite part of it.
Yeah, but I assume that you are married?
I am.
And happily?
Yes.
Good. Now, has that drained any of your energies? I know that I used to write write poetry, and I wrote a ton of, like, this kind of poetry. When I got married and became kind of, like, too happy,
uh-huh.
It drained, you know? And I'm just wondering if you have that kind of brain drain going on, too.
That's kind of funny, because, you know, I've heard, I've spoken to a lot of songwriters who've had that same experience. I don't know. I think it's just a personality trait that I'm a bit cynical,
mm-hmm.
and so I think from that point of view, I just I sort of take the music,
mm-hmm.
And I try and I think that sort of cynicism is always fun in a song, because I think you can add some humor, or I think it can add some bite, or you know, maybe even sarcasm in some cases.
Mm. I recognize you as a very fine songwriter, but I'll ask you this anyway.
Uh-huh.
Are you ever tempted to play your dad's songs? Do you ever play them at all when you're in concert or even by yourself?
I do. I'm a big fan of his music. I think that the thing I love most about my father's music was his ability to make a hero out of an ordinary, or, you know, just an everyday man or woman.
Yeah, like the guy at the car wash.
Like the guy at the car wash, like a roller derby queen, like a truck driver,
tough guy in Chicago.
You know, any kind of, you know, some, you know, tough on the street, whatever it might have been, you know. He always found a way to find humor in it, and at the same time, really lovingly portrayed these people as heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it was an amazing talent that he had to do that, because a lot of people very, you know, a lot of people spend so much of their time trying to make themselves look good, and he was so good at making other people look good.
He wrote some of the most beautiful love songs anybody's ever heard of. I find one of the really ironic things, of course, and I'm sure many people have noticed it, was when he passed away, the song "I've Got a Name" becoming such a huge hit.
I know. Well, I think it was sort of a, you know, he was just taking off as an artist, and I think that his songs really had an impact. It wasn't just a one hit wonder sort of. Pop music,
definitely not.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I love that pop music, but I think that his stuff went a little bit deeper, and I think it, by him dying, it really affected a lot of people.
You know, when the song "I've Got a Name" comes out, it reminds me of the fact that you've got a name, and I'm wondering when you realized Croce, what it meant to a lot of other people.
You know, I think I realized. A bit when I was a really small kid, that I was treated differently, and that people had found some reason to in some way give me some respect that I, you know, didn't deserve, but maybe inherited.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got older, I found it's the coin sort of flip over a bit when I started playing music professionally, and saw it in a somewhat different light as something that was, you know, where people were trying to, maybe in some cases, trying to find a way to disrespect what I was doing because it was something that I inherited, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. I do.
And so I think it was along the way that I've seen both sides of it, and I think that there's been a lot of great things that have come out of being my father's son, and I think that there's been a lot of you know, difficult things along the way as well. I think overall, I'm real happy with who I am and who he was.
I think that just from a psychological point here, that when you first started playing at first your CD, you couldn't have been far away from your father's music than you started. And I think that as you get more and more comfortable with your own career, you're getting more and more closer to some of the stuff that he was doing.
I think so too, and it could be that. Just an age thing. It could be a maturity thing. There could be lots of different factors.
Well, I just want to tell you, I love the CD. It's called Transit. It's A.J. Croce's fourth CD, and in my opinion, his best. And I look for better and better things to come from this man. And A.J., I hope we can speak again sometime in the near future.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
Take care. Good luck.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. That's A.J. Croce.